The night before returning home from a prolonged estrangement from his family, Hebrew patriarch and prodigal son Jacob couldn't sleep. So he went down to the river, perhaps to pray. But instead of whatever he expected to find there, he met a rival, an opponent generally thought to be an angel, whatever that is. And scripture tells us, without explanation, that the two of them wrestled all night, that neither was able to prevail, that at dawn the angel threw Jacob's hip out of joint, and that before the angel departed, Jacob asked for and received the angel's blessing. It's a strange story, intended, I believe, to give us pause, to ignite our imaginations in contemplating the mysterious depths of our relationships with God, with our families, with an unpredictable world, and perhaps especially with ourselves. As a foundational myth, I think it's a much better story than, for example, George Washington copping to chopping down the cherry tree. Neither story lends itself to history very well, but that isn't really the point, is it? We teach our kids about young George Washington because we want them to associate a high regard for honesty and integrity with an equally high esteem of country. What matters more than what the story reports is what it means, and not insignificantly who's telling it. And that's the inspiration I take from Jacob's story. It's told not by a school teacher, or a nation, or even a religion. It's told by a people, Israel. The blessing Jacob receives is a new name, that same name, Israel, meaning one who wrestles with God. Israel tells the story of its baptism, its naming, to illustrate the special chosen relationship it claims to have with God. Israel is blessed, we infer, not for its glory or virtue or even its faith. Israel is blessed, as are we, for enduring the cost of faith, for enduring its struggles, a notion with no little resonance these days. What I'm interested in here isn't religious faith, but faith is a word that encapsulates where our commitments lie, especially our deeply contemplated and dearly held commitments. Commitments that reflect less what we say we believe than what our lives show we believe. In that sense, we might agree that some people give ample evidence that their primary faith is in themselves. And that may or may not be a good thing. But whether your faith or mine is in ourselves, or our religion, or our country, or whatever else we or others may name as our God, it will almost inevitably entail struggles. Sometimes great struggles that can risk exhausting or disheartening or maybe even disabling us. And while I don't wish those results on any of us, I think that when we find ourselves engaged in those struggles, especially the great ones, as we almost inevitably will, we do well not to lose sight of how they have within them possibilities of great blessing. I think most, if not all of us, recognize that we tend to learn more from our shortcomings and failures than from our successes. That we grow more from whatever it was that we had to work hard for or give more of ourselves to than we do from the things that came easily or fortuitously. We each have our own stories, our own struggles. When I found myself recovering from 6 hours of coronary bypass surgery and almost 2 months removed from my only source of income before I could get back to work, I was initially terrified, not just by having no idea of how my private therapy practice, my living, would survive, but more profoundly by deeply facing my mortality, my ultimate vulnerability for the first time in my then 54 years. But somehow the very altered and weakened place I wakened to gave me purpose. My focus became simplified. I fell into making each day primarily about just one thing, getting better. And without giving much thought to it, that new approach to life led me to open up to the abundance of love reaching out to me that I'd been too distracted to pay much attention to. And that changed my life in profound ways that have endured to this day, not the least in leading directly to the remarkable person you know as Sue Fisher, my very first girlfriend from high school days, coming back into my life as its greatest blessing, a daily reminder of how very much I have to be grateful for. But even if struggles don't go as smoothly and well as my health struggle has, I think they can arouse otherwise untapped forces in our approach to life. They challenge us. They energize us. And I think they invite us to expand our vision, to connect with what awaits beyond self-imposed limitations. Sometimes they inject a measure of excitement into otherwise sedated outlooks. Now, I don't mean to overstate this. I know we hear stories of dark clouds every day where whatever silver linings lie within are still waiting to be found. Sometimes it's a struggle to anticipate anything other than the havoc and despair of whatever disaster has unfolded, especially when we know there's no guarantee any kind of blessing will ever show up. I'm not talking about any magical cure-all here. Perhaps the struggles that most of us privileged souls face pale in comparison to those of the untold millions less fortunate than we are. But that doesn't make ours any less real. We all have our share of sleepless nights, our vexing worries, our rotten deals. All of which leads me to have a thought or two about our common life, our shared life as a community of faith. We've had our collective little trials too, haven't we? In truth, for some of us, they may not have been all that little. It might be impossible to account for all those struggles, big and small, to count their costs and benefits, but I believe it would be worthwhile ruminating about that accounting anyway. I suspect that doing that might give us some valuable insight, perhaps even into the sources of our growth and strength, both as a community and as the unique individuals that comprise it. I think most of us would agree that our community is at an inflection point. We've come through COVID basically okay, but not without a struggle, not without adapting to what for some of us have been difficult adjustments, not without troubling departures of members we miss, and not without a disconcerting squeeze on our budget, but also not without having grown in some ways and learned a thing or two about ourselves. And now we're faced with a significant challenge whose outcome will have a major impact on all of us. If we're to move on to the new life we've envisioned, one I think we recognize is less a luxury than a necessity, it's abundantly clear that we're going to have to struggle. We're going to have to dig deeper, not just into our already stressed finances, but also into our equally stressed efforts to maintain and build what we already share. We're going to have to work harder and give more, as indeed many of us already have and do. I think it needs to be acknowledged that neither of those things, doing more, giving more, is going to be easy. But wouldn't it be worthwhile considering not just the cost of that struggle, but the potential blessing of having confronted it head on and together? I think it's difficult to overstate the empowering value of a community's sense of connectedness. If you'll pardon a military analogy, it's well known that the most effective units fight much less zealously for their country or even their ideals than they do for each other. And as a mental health clinician, one of the basic concepts that I tried never to lose sight of is that the health and well-being of children, in fact, of almost all individuals, is inexorably linked to the health and well-being of their families. That goes for us too, for our lives as UU Saratoga family members. Whatever struggles we may or may not face as individuals, our UU family is in the midst of one we share. We're all in the same boat. And I'd submit that our individual well-being is at least in some way influenced by that, both by how we bend ourselves to the task at hand and by our feelings about what we face and how we confront and act on those feelings. Like Jacob, we may need to do a little soul searching. Our common struggle raises both shared and private questions. Can we afford to give more? Things are pretty tight already. Can we do even more when it's hard to get through what life already asks of us? Well, maybe the answer to those questions is no. No, we can't. No, we've hit the wall. That's likely to be the answer for some of us, in which case we might stop to be grateful we're in a place, a family, where we won't be judged, no matter how we answer. And what a blessing that is, one that I believe is magnified by whatever struggle we may have endured to get to it. Our UU family is a blessing, I believe, no matter the range of feelings we may have about it. And if our family is at a turning point, a crisis of sorts, my hope is that we'll face that crisis courageously, even daringly, fortified by our belief in all that binds us together. We could, I guess, turn back from the river and do nothing, knowing we could continue as we are, at least for a while. But I wonder what that would mean for our sense of ourselves as a family. I feel more heartened about what it would mean to leap ahead, to venture across that river, even if some of its currents might be a bit perilous. I think we're poised to take on the identity of a community blessed for its new struggles. For my part, I'm ready to jump into the water with my sights set on what it will mean to reach the other side. I know enough not to expect always smooth sailing, but I'm counting on a renewed sense of purpose, not just for myself, but for all of us.